Just like an annual checkup is important for maintaining good health, performing regular financial checkups is an essential part of planning for a healthy and successful retirement. On this episode, we'll be talking about some questions to think about with your financial wellness checkup with John Choi here on Middle Class Millionaire.
Becoming a millionaire isn't just about growing your money. It's also about protecting and preserving your wealth by using the right financial strategies for your situation. Welcome. This is Middle Class Millionaire with John Choi. John has his Master's of Science in Financial Services and is a certified financial planner and the president of Epiphany Capital.
Hey everybody, welcome into the podcast. John and I here back once again to talk investing, finance, and retirement, and maybe brushing up the old financial wellness checkup. You know, it's springtime is upon us. We're into late April, I think, with this episode. And so, we're kind of maybe thinking about getting outside and doing more activities and so on and so forth. And, you know, you want to make sure you're feeling good and all that kind of stuff. You go to the doc and whatnot. So why not take your finances to the doc as well and kind of get a little tune-up, little checkup. So we're going to kind of blend those or merge those two kind of little analogies together here on the podcast. What's going on, my friend? How you doing this week?
Good. I'm just trying to get ready for spring cleaning, dust off the golf set. You know how it is.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's that time of the year, right? We all got that spring fever going on, and you know, it's important to run through the stuff and kind of, hey, you got to get the clubs out, make sure that you didn't put them away completely nasty from last year. You know, you got to do some yard stuff. You got to clean that up. Well,
yeah.
You also got to clean up your, you know, your finances a little bit. So I want you to give us some things to think about here on this week's episode. Because we, you know, if we're regularly assessing our budget or goals, progress, you know, things of that nature, it's easier to make some informed decisions. If whether you're losing weight, whether you're, you know, paying down debt, whatever the case is, right? Having some kind of a strategy, having some outline, some structure helps you get there. So I'd say, is that probably the first and foremost thing you want to do, John, is just review the goals and just kind of discuss what it is you're trying to accomplish with your finances?
Yeah, that's a great starting point is what do you want out of life? What do you want out of your money? The thing that I've seen where people succeed the most in terms of their finances, there's one thing I think that really separates the haves and the have-nots, mm-hmm. is the people that have, they are very intentional about their finances. So my friend and I talk, and we like to talk about health and fitness and working out and stuff like that. He goes, John, you don't drift into a good body. You don't drift into health. And I said, you know, it's the same way in finances. You don't just drift into finances or, you know, a lot of money, unless you hit the lotto or something like that, which isn't going to happen to you and I and most of the listeners out there.
Right.
We don't drift into financial health and we don't drift into a lot of money. We've got to be very, very intentional and have a plan to do it.
Okay, well, let's talk about some few ways to do that. So we'll use the doc analogy a little bit here. So let's check those vitals. And I guess the vitals is going to be the income and the outgoing, right? That's just going to have to be our, you know, basic inflow and outflow, right? Cash flow.
Yeah, and that starts with your income statement or your cash flow statement. Hey, what comes into the checking account? What goes out? We're generally pretty good about, you know, what comes in. What goes out is, it can be eye-popping.
A lot okay? more than we often realize.
Yeah, I mean, I just heard somebody saying that they spent just an ungodly amount on Starbucks or something like that.
And it's right.
just, and
didn't
might be
realize
Starbucks
it.
For somebody else. It
right.
might be a subscription to something that they're not using anymore. It could be whatever. But
right.
you really got to understand where your money's going.
Yeah, and you know, I'll say like for our household and probably many households, Amazon is the culprit for a lot of that
yeah.
too, right?
I was going to say that the UPS driver knows us by
Oh, I think they all do. I think it, you know, it's gotten so crazy that it's like you almost feel like they're casing the joint, right? Because they're there so much. It's like, they, you know, they know everything about my schedule. They're always here, you know, or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's definitely not the, you know, you got to get some of that spending under control. Not saying, and I know that people hate the B word, right? It's not saying you got to live on a budget, but you certainly got to have an understanding of where you're at, just like you've done in any other time of life. You didn't just go willy-nilly when you were in your 20s or 30s. Or 40s, so why would you do it in your 50s, 60s, or 70s?
Yeah, I mean, that's Yeah, Amazon is a big culprit. But, you know, we just got to, I'm just trying to emphasize that. But we really have to get on the same page with our spouses if you're married. And we need to be like, hey, look, we need to kind of slow down here. Or we need to be like, hey, here's the reality of things. And I think, again, going back to the health analogy, you look at, you know, before nobody put out the calorie count to anything. Right. And so we go to a restaurant, we're like, oh, okay, we go to Cheesecake Factory or something like that. It's like, oh yeah, it's my favorite dish. It's like 2,400 calories. You're like, what? And you're like, ah, maybe
it is no longer my favorite dish.
Yeah. And so, you know, knowledge is power. It goes a long way. So just knowing where your money is going. And I mean, if you're okay with it, you're okay with it, but just know where your money is going.
Yeah.
And then make adjustments accordingly.
Great point. All right. So let's go on to building up our financial immunity, if we're doing that wellness analogy. So what are we talking about here?
That's your emergency fund. The CFP board recommends if you've got two sources of income, like a dual income couple that are making about the same amount of money, you should have 3 months of spending put away in just in cash. And if there's only one working spouse, then it's 6 months. And then also, that's your emergency fund. But then I think you should also keep something in addition to that in cash for coming up expenditures. Like if you know you're going to get a car next year, mm-hmm. you should be saving up for that. And, you know, you should plan accordingly again. So,
yeah. Yeah. And, you know, what about things like automating those savings, John? If you need some help there, I mean, there's a lot of good tools for that. If you're trying to build that emergency fund and you say to yourself, well, okay, I don't have one and I can't just throw it all in there at one time, maybe think about something like that to help you just kind of slowly get it built up.
Oh, automation's the only way to go for me.
Mm-hmm.
It just takes the discipline out of the...
Or the lack thereof.
Sometimes we don't, and sometimes cash flow is better in some months and cash flow is worse in others.
Right.
So this doesn't really give you a choice. It just takes it no matter what. So yeah. I think that's a great way. For me, it's the only way where they just pull money out of my checking account and just put it away.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, you know, so when you go to the doc sometimes, they do, we're going to do a little health screening, right? Or you do one of those telecalls or something like that, right? So let's do a little screening for our portfolio, which clearly is going to be, you know, reviewing and looking at the overall investment strategy.
Yeah, I think what you have to do there on your annual reviews with your advisor, I don't know if you do it annually or quarterly or whatever, but, you know, whatever you guys decide to do, it really is, you should really look at, hey, you know, is this an acceptable amount of risk that I'm willing to take? Because as we get older, we have less years of working and we've got less years for recovery should the market go down. Now, it's on fire right now, the market, but, you know, it's not going to be like that all the time. So we've got to watch out for that. And we've got to, you know, as we get older, we should get a little bit more and more conservative as we're going to rely on our portfolio for withdrawals. So you got to keep that in mind.
Yeah. And if we're thinking about the, you know, a lot of times this is where the risk conversation comes up, right? So if we're thinking about, okay, when you're doing these reviews and stuff, you're saying, look, I didn't do as well as the market did, you know, in 23 because the market was back up. It's like, well, yeah, but it was down in 22 and we had our risk tolerance set, you know, to not take too much of a hit or whatever the case is. You got to have those things kind of kept in mind in those conversations so that you don't feel as though like you're somewhere, you know, not getting what you're supposed to be getting out of this. Because a lot of times it's going to be based on that risk tolerance that you set up. And that should probably change or will change.
I mean, if you got like, again, if you got a 70-30 portfolio, 70% in equities and 30% in fixed income or bonds, I mean, you should be getting about 70% of the market returns. And the 30%, you should kind of resign yourself to the fact that it's going to get 3-5% returns on that portion of your money. So to say that, hey, you did worse in the market, that just means that we were following our plan. We got 70% of the market. That's great because that's what we're supposed to be getting, right?
So right.
That's how. Just like, hey, if the market went down, you know, 10%, and if you're in a 70-30 portfolio, maybe it should have gone down only 6 or 7, just simply because you didn't take all the risk that the market did.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So let's do a little debt diagnosis here when we're talking about this conversation. Talk about what it looks like to successfully manage and reduce debt levels, because clearly that's something that, you know, on our prior podcast this month, we were talking about Gen Xers, right? Some of the things. And obviously at that stage around, you know, 45, 50, 52, somewhere in there, you're really starting to think about how you can start cutting down that debt. And you're in a time of life where hopefully you can do that.
You know, with respect to debt, I'm just going to make some blanket statements. Okay. So credit card debt, bad. Pay that off ASAP. That's the first stuff that you want to get rid of. I'll talk about mortgages a little bit. I don't have a problem with people having mortgages. And I do think, and some people will say, oh, it's the 30-year fixed mortgage is the way to go, or the 15-year fixed mortgage is the way to go. I was thinking about that the other day, and I was like, you know, as a younger person, if you're getting into a house, you're buying your house late 20s, early 30s, it's your first home, you're not going to stay in there. And that's, for most of us, that's not going to be our first and last home. We're going to, you know, what's the statistic? I think people move 7 times in their lives.
really? So I've blown that out of the water.
You've blown that? Well, maybe, are you a military family or something?
No. But when I was younger, my family definitely moved around a lot. But yeah.
Yeah. So if you're going to move around a lot, if it's just you and your spouse, mm-hmm. right, and you're planning to have kids, maybe the first home that you have is a townhouse or a condo or
sure.
a small starter
yeah.
home.
Right.
I like 30-year mortgage. It's going to keep your payments low and it's better than renting. I almost think about it as renting, but you kind of have the upside of, hey, if the house price goes up, you get the equity in the house. As you get older in our 50s, I like the 15-year mortgage. I just want to get it paid off. And by the time I retire, 65 years old, you have no more mortgage. It's great. You've got an investment property. Awesome. You can use that for income. So I can't really say that you should get this type of mortgage or that type of mortgage. The longer ones, like the 30-year ones, I favor them when you're younger. And the shorter ones, like the 15-year fixed mortgage, I favor those when you're getting older.
Gotcha. Okay. And again, I think debt is certainly a subjective conversation on the house side, but I think we probably all agree and everybody out there knows we got to get rid of some of that, you know, the bad, quote unquote, bad debt, right? Those credit cards, things of that nature. Certainly not going to be a bad idea to help reduce and get that stuff down. What about some proactive planning? So for lack of a better term, kind of preventative measures.
You know, there's taxes, of course. You got to prepare for that. There's long-term care needs. And I think a good time to look at long-term care needs is probably maybe early to mid-60s, even late 60s is fine, because that could be your biggest expense when you get older. There's healthcare costs for most of us. The vast majority of Americans after we're 65, we're going to be on Medicare and we should be getting some supplemental plans. Taxes is always a concern, and you got to do some proactive tax planning. And you got to do it probably before you retire, 5-10 years before you retire. You got to be like, this is what my tax situation is going to look like. And just spread out that tax bill over a number of years. There's so many tax tripwires, Mark. I mean, there's something called IRMA, income-related monthly adjustment amount, where it's a penalty if you make, quote unquote, too much money, too much taxable income when you're at Medicare. They bump up your premium and it could be a lot. You could be paying more than twice the other guy for the same coverage.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's a penalty for being too successful. That's the way that I see it.
So, and it seems like there's more and more of that recently. So you got to be careful.
I mean, the holy grail of retirement is having the biggest paycheck at the lowest taxable income.
Right. Yeah.
That's all it is.
That's what you're trying to shoot for right there.
And that's proactive tax planning. So
definitely. Yeah. I've heard the IRMA thing. People, it's a great way to kind of think about it, keep it in your mind because of the way it sounds. With the acronym there is you've got two people in your pocket, your Uncle Sam and your Aunt Irma.
that is true.
Reaching into your pocket, digging and trying to get stuff
they're
out of
there. They're
both mean. So, and they're both not. Yeah, they're both those aunt and uncle that come over to visit that pinch your cheeks really hard that you can't stand.
Yeah.
All right. So, all right, let's kind of wrap it up here with just, you know, make sure you got a follow-up plan, right? So whatever your plan of attack is, you know, go through, you know, these wellness checks with, you know, your advisor, or get an advisor if you don't have one, and really talk about what the process looks like so that you can stay on track.
Yeah. You know, and that's through your scheduled meetings. It could be annual, it could be quarterly, it could be whatever you guys decide it to be. But And I think you should definitely have an ongoing conversation. I mean, that's the last step, the seventh step in the seven-step financial planning process that the CFP board
mm-hmm.
puts out is, you know, you got to monitor the results and you got to monitor the plan. It's basically annual course corrections. And, you know, you don't want to get too off kilter. Make adjustments. And so, you know, we're going to actually realize the plan that we've set forth.
And that's, again, the point of having specific goals, creating a timeline so that you can, you know, schedule these appointments and just being proactive about your own financial health. You would do it, you know, at least you should be doing it about your physical health. So you certainly should be doing it about your financial health because it is going to help. And, you know, they kind of go hand in hand. We all know that money is one of the biggest stressors that we all deal with. And so if you've got those ducks in a row, it only stands to reason that that's going to help reduce some of the stress, which is going to obviously help you on the health side as well. So, you know, how do you start? You take some action. You reach out. You vet a couple of advisors. You talk to a couple. You have some those complimentary consultations. You check them out online. You look at the, what is it, BrokerCheck? You can go to BrokerCheck or FINRA.org. You can do your homework a little bit, but ultimately you need to sit down and have a conversation and go through the process and see if it's the right fit for you, if they're going to have the right temperament, the right delivery style and how they educate you, all those kinds of things. So if you need some help, you know, John, again, is a great resource to tap into. He's an instructor. He is an educator for the CFP program. He's a certified financial planner himself, and he's the president at Epiphany Capital. So don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on Apple or Spotify or YouTube, whatever podcasting platform you like. Just type in Middle Class Millionaire in the search box or go to John's website, johnchoy.net. That's johnchoy.net. John, my friend, thanks for hanging out and breaking things down with me. As always, I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Mark. Good fun today.
Always good stuff. We'll see you next time here on Middle Class Millionaire.
Bye-bye, Bill.
Epiphany Capital is a registered investment advisor, RIA, located in the state of Illinois. Epiphany Capital provides investment advisory and related services for clients nationally. Epiphany Capital will maintain all applicable registration and licenses as required by various states in which Epiphany Capital conducts business, as applicable. Epiphany Capital renders individualized responses to persons in a particular state only after complying with all regulatory requirements or pursuant to an applicable state exemption or exclusion.